Welcome back to the Boneyard Podcast, everybody. This is your host, Jared Shaffet, along with
Artemis Brower.
We're coming to you this week with episode 77. Artie, 77, lucky number 7. We're going for win number 7 this week.
Yes, we are.
Carolina Pirate football team is, Artie, and wow.
Yes, we are.
The Pirates are bowl eligible for the first time since 2014.
How many years is that?
7 years, Artie.
7 years.
Lucky number 7. Artie, wow. How you been, man?
Oh, I'm a whole lot better now that ECU is going to a bowl game. I'm a whole lot better. Everything is just brighter. Food tastes better. Alcohol tastes better. Everything is better. Work is better. Everything is just good knowing that my team's going to a bowl game. It's all good.
Ain't that the damn truth? Artie, like, I gotta say, like, I was almost as excited for that as I was when my Braves won the World Series.
No.
I say almost. We got over the hump. We're over that hump. We've been telling y'all, Pirate Nation, we've been telling y'all that ECU football is on the come up. And guess what? They're back.
Yeah.
Do not let this team become the best team in the conference in the next 2-3 years. Do not let that happen. If that happens, then the country will be put on notice.
It's about damn time, though, man. It's honestly, it's about damn time.
It's been far too long.
It's been far too long since we have any relevancy. This is a program that we all know has been in the dumps. And to finally see Coach Houston and these players and the rest of that coaching staff be able to take a program that was left for dead by the previous administration and bring them out within 3 years and get back to a bowl game and kind of get back to what ECU fans are expecting to see. It's just beautiful. It's just absolutely beautiful. We're not done yet. We're going for win number 7 this weekend. We should win this weekend. Let's not forget, we should go to Navy and win that game, but we'll get into that later. And then we all know who we got 2 weeks from now. We all know who we got Black Friday.
We're not
Friday afternoon at 3:30. We're not looking ahead, but everybody knows what we got in 2 weeks. So the job is not done yet. We got 2 more games on the schedule. We know we're going to a bowl game, but we want to finish even stronger than that. And I cannot wait to talk about what's coming up in the next few weeks.
All right, Artie. Well, I'm feeling pretty damn good. My Braves are World Series champs.
Hurricanes, I see you got the gear on.
Hurricanes are, I believe it's 11-2-0 now on the season. Best team in the league. And my Pirates are bowl eligible. ECU basketball starts 3-0. You can't get any better than where I'm at right now. As already mentioned, I'm wearing one of my many purchases over the past couple of weeks since the Braves won. This is a Columbia pullover, Artie. This thing's nice. Like I love this thing.
I would hope so.
But
you already spent about $80 on it.
Artie, do you know more than that actually? Do you know who Yvonne Rodriguez is?
Nope, not at all.
You never heard of Pudge Rodriguez?
Who?
Pudge Rodriguez.
Fudge Rodriguez. Is that what you meant?
I mean, he's a Hall of Fame catcher. He wore the number 2009, or he wore the number 77 in 2009 with the Houston Astros. He actually wore number 7 most of his career. I'm guessing on that Houston Astros team, there was already a number 7. I didn't look that far into it on who was number 7 on that team, or if they haven't retired. Don't really care. As the Astros suck, as we learned 2 weeks ago tonight.
I mean, they don't suck.
I mean, they do when they don't cheat.
They did go to the World Series.
They do when they don't cheat. They beat. I guess they did. Yeah, they did. I think they beat your White Sox on the way there.
They did beat my White Sox. Yeah,
but Pudge Rodriguez had over 2,800 hits, 2,844 hits, 311 home runs, and .296 batting average. Not a bad career. I mean, for a catcher that played every single day. So, shout out to you, Pudge Rodriguez. One of my favorite non-Braves of all time. I'll say that.
Shout out to Fudge Rodriguez.
Artie, let's go ahead and get into it. We'll roll through this fairly quickly before we get to the main talking point of the podcast. ECU basketball, like I said earlier, they started 3-0 on the season.
Yeah.
Beat South Carolina State, beat Canisius. I think I'm pronouncing that right. And then Western Carolina. Man, we're going to focus mostly on that Western Carolina game because the other two games, they should have been blowouts, and they weren't. And the Western Carolina game was closer than what it looked like when you're watching it.
Side note, have you ever heard of a Canisius College? Have you ever heard of that college before ECU played them?
I'm pretty sure they made the NCAA tournament a couple years ago.
No. Canisius? Can we look that up?
I'm looking it up. You talk.
Canisius, they're out of Buffalo, New York, because I did do a Google search on them because I was so curious to see who the hell is Canisius, whatever, however you pronounce their name, college. And then their mascot is like a flying eagle on top of a lion.
All right, Artie, since you want to, oh no, that's the CIT. Never mind. no, they haven't made. Okay, so they haven't made the
big dance.
They haven't made the NCAA tournament since 1996, when they lost in the first round, 72-43 to Utah. Yeah,
nobody cares.
They've made the NIT five times. Last time being in 1995, where they lost to Virginia Tech and Penn State. That's when it was double elimination. And then they've made the CIT tournament four times, where, I mean, let's see, they were in it in 2013. You know what happened in 2013. They also, last time they made it was 2017. So I knew that they were somewhere around there.
I mean, I bet the people did not expect when they logged on to listen to this podcast for us to talk about Canisius College for a solid 2 minutes.
I'm pretty sure it's Canisius.
Canisius, nobody cares. They're in Buffalo, New York.
We have a consensus on the podcast that they suck. But yeah, let's talk about what this Western Carolina game. To be honest with y'all, this is really the first one I was able to watch. The South Carolina State game, as you heard last week, we were recording during it. We were keeping up with it, but this was the first game that I was able to actually watch fully through. And I mean, ECU basketball looks good. I mean, aside from getting into foul trouble early at times, they look pretty good for a young team. I mean, this team's young. This is the biggest team I think I've ever seen for ECU. I mean, we got a bunch of guys, 6'4", 6'5", and they can ball.
Yeah, I mean, we started out 5-0 last year. I know COVID had a lot to do with that. I know that the shortened year and everything that went on last year had a lot to do with that. Starting off 3-0 against South Carolina State, that C college from Buffalo, and Western Carolina. That doesn't really impress me. I'm not really going to bat an eye until we get into conference play. I want to see what we do in conference play. It's a good start. I'm not sitting here as a Debbie Downer saying I'm upset because we're 3-0. It's a good start, but this is how we started last year.
They're going to get their first test on Thursday night.
They play Oklahoma.
Play Oklahoma in Myrtle Beach. If you can make it to that game, make it. Try to go. We will not be attending that game. But,
no.
Yeah, get down to Myrtle Beach. Go see the Pirates play the Sooners.
Yeah.
Boomer Sooner.
If we compete in that game and we keep it close, then I'll be like, oh, okay, now I see that we might have something here that might be a little special. But until then, we're just doing our job at this point.
Artie, will you join me on the mustache train if they beat Oklahoma?
I think – did I do it last time?
You did it for No Shave or for Mustache March.
I did it for Mustache March. That's right. You might be able to get me.
All right. Hey, so what I'm hearing you say is I will – if we beat Oklahoma on Thursday night, I'm going to shave my mustache for when Jared and I roll into Annapolis, Maryland on Saturday. I'm going to have a mustache, and we're going to be the premier podcast is going to be the podcast of mustaches.
We're probably not going to beat Oklahoma.
But so what you're saying is you're going to take the bet. He's taking it. He just gave me a verbal. That's saying okay.
Go ahead and run with it.
All right. If ECU beats Oklahoma on Thursday night, Artie will shave his beard into a mustache. He's looking a lot like LeBron James right now. Got like the full beard going. I mean, you do kind of like with the way the beard is like.
I just need this right here to connect right here in between, and then I'm set, and then I'm good.
Yeah, that's my problem. That's why I shave it down to a mustache. But Artie, I want to go back to the Western Carolina game real quick. I mean, shooting 51.5% from the field, that's pretty damn good. I mean,
oh yeah,
they were 50% from 3-point range. Tristan Newton scored his career high 30 points, which that's great. When you lose a guy like Jaden Gardner, you lose a guy like Jaden Gardner, who he's been your playmaker for the last 2 years. You got to find somebody to fill his shoes, and Tristan Newton's doing a pretty damn good job of stepping up and filling those shoes.
Yeah, we said, the five guys that we had returning, they had to be the guys. Guys like Tristan Newton and the rest of the crew, because we have such a young nucleus of talent in ECU. So the guys that were returning, they had to step up immediately. They didn't really have a choice. They had to be the guys because we lost a guy like Jaden Gardner, who went on to Virginia. So happy to see it. Like I said, I'm not like overly excited, but I am happy that we are at least taking care of our business against teams that we should take care of our business.
Can I start getting excited when we beat Oklahoma and you shave your?
Oh yes. If East Carolina basketball beats Oklahoma, then yes, everyone should be excited. Everyone.
Okay. Sounds good. And maybe we'll go live and do a live stream of you shaving your beard into a mustache. I like the idea. Artie, great idea. Artie, let's talk about this Memphis game last week. We said last week on the podcast that this is going to be a very exciting game.
Mm-hmm.
Did we not?
Yes, we did.
And boy, were we right. And I think it lived up to the hype and quite honestly, probably exceeded the hype all the way around.
Mm-hmm.
That game was one of the, that was probably the most exciting college football game all weekend. And unfortunately it was on ESPN Plus. The whole nation didn't get to see it, but that was a game that you should have had on primetime Saturday night.
That was a quality football game to watch. That was one of the more like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
My heart was racing.
My heart was racing for 3.5 hours the entire time. And, you know, ECU made their mistakes in that game. There's a lot of chances in the red zone that we did not capitalize on. It was not a complete game on our front. And we were still able to walk into Memphis and walk away with a win against a program that has been at the top of the American Athletic Conference for the last 5, 6, 7 years. So, excellent win. Got us to bowl eligibility. I can never say that word. I don't know why. But Mike Houston, finally, like this was his moment. We said this. We said this was going to be the most important win of his tenure, and it absolutely has been. I mean, this is the win that should kind of catapult you and this program to kind of stay either on this pace and then rise from there. So biggest win in program history of the last 5, 6 years, I would say, maybe even more than that. As a Pirate fan, as an alumni of East Carolina, it was just like a sigh of relief. Like, whew, finally, like we actually did it. And we did it against a solid team with a winning record. And that's what I have been talking about pretty much all season. Can we win a close game against a solid team on their home turf? And we did that. That is the sign to me of a program that is going from good to great, bad to good, good to great. When you can go into another good team's house and win a game on the road, that's how you know you're going in the right direction. So just happy all the way around.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about a team that, had only lost one game at home in like the last 4 or 5 years.
They don't lose at home. Memphis does not lose at home.
I don't know what it is. We talked about it last week with our great guest, Memphis Spence,
mm-hmm.
about we don't know what it is about the Liberty Bowl, but for some reason, visitors don't win there unless you're – UT San Antonio or the East Carolina Pirates. I mean, yeah.
One of which is still undefeated and ranked.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's talk about, Memphis is a good team. They've got good wins, got some bad losses.
Right.
A loss to Temple, perfect. But that Memphis and ECU are right there, kind of in the same middle ground.
Mm-hmm.
I think that with where the conference is right now, it's, I mean, that's a premier game in the conference right now. Those are two solid teams, two teams that are most likely going to be in bowls. I haven't looked at Memphis's schedule on down the road. I believe that, I mean, they got Houston this weekend. That's probably another L. They might be able to finish 6-6. I haven't seen their final game of the season, but they might be able to squeak out and get to 6 wins. And who knows? They've been known to beat teams like SMU, Mississippi State, and they could pull out a win over Houston, and I would not be surprised,
right,
in the slightest.
Yeah, I mean, I lost my point. I completely lost my point. I had something and I forgot. I ain't gonna lie to you. Yeah, as Jared is watching this hockey game.
No, the hockey game's not on. Yeah, they'll beat Tulane. They got Tulane at home. They'll beat Tulane. No, I've got my other screen pulled up here already. I've got two screens going so I can easily look up stuff when you don't know the answer.
I had it and I lost it. That's like the first time that's happened in months where I had a point and I completely lost it. But I do agree with you. I think Memphis is going to finish 6-6. I think that they are going to finish strong and probably go to a bowl game. And just the overall fact that the aura of that program, just being able to go into a program like that, take away what they are this year, they have been at the top of the American Athletic Conference for the better part of the last half decade. So being able to go into Memphis and get a win like that, it's special. It's important. Holton played a good game with his legs and his throwing arm ability. Tyler Snead had over 100 yards receiving. That was a phenomenal game from him. Running backs did what they had to do in the game. Defense was bend, not break once again. They showed up when they needed to show up. That stop at the end, because let's not forget, Memphis went for two at the end. Memphis was not trying to go for another overtime. They were playing for the win. They went for it. Our defense showed up huge to get us that victory.
Shout out Miles Berry.
On Saturday. So, you know, defense, like I said, is continuing to do excellent things. Blake Harrell, I cannot sing his praises enough. We all know that he's up for multiple, assistant coach of the year awards. So I just cannot sing his praises enough. On the other side of the ball, Donnie Kirkpatrick, I'm not going to say anything bad about him, but we all know how we feel about Donnie K. But I will say this was a great team effort. It was a good coaching effort. And going into Navy, I feel good about getting the 7 wins. I mean, I really do. I feel really confident about getting the 7-4.
The thing that I'll say about the game, and I mean, the one thing I've started picking up on and paying more attention to as the year has gone on, and I think a lot of us Pirate fans have, is how we do on third down. I mean, ECU, I don't have the number in front of me right now. I could probably pull it up, but that ECU was like over 50% on third down last week against Memphis, which is fantastic.
By far the best third down percentage we've had all season, not even close.
ECU was 18 for 26 on third down and 1 for 2 on fourth. I mean, I'll take that any day of the week. I'll take that any day of the week. I'll be glad to take that. Yeah, I mean, that's a good third down conversion rating. And then you talk about, then you get to the red zone and you can't punch it in. And that's my issue with Donnie Kirkpatrick is we've seen it multiple times this year. We saw it against USF, I believe it was, where you call the play and it's a play that, I mean, everybody's seen on film. We've seen it time and time again. Mm-hmm. It's a play that we're probably gonna get stopped on. It's either gonna be a rush up the middle. Holton's gonna try to jump over the line. That's what's gonna happen. And a lot of times it gets snuffed out, and for whatever reason, it doesn't happen. So to me, that's that's going to be the thing that I look for the most, is how can we get into the red zone and come away with seven instead of three consistently. Now, going into Navy this week, another thing that I've been trying to pay attention to more is sustaining drives. And we've seen it over the past couple of weeks where ECU goes on these 13, 14, 15. I believe they had an 18-play drive at one point on Saturday.
It's very important going into Navy.
I mean, the possession time, looking at it, ECU possessed the ball for 42 minutes and 47 seconds compared to the 17 minutes and 13 seconds for Memphis.
Yeah.
You control the ball, you win the ball game. And that's going to be a key for this weekend. The way Navy's offense is, the triple option, they like to control the ball. It's not going to be a high-scoring game. Now, ECU will have to score on their possessions. Navy, you just got to stop them. Find a way to stop them, and you should be good. You've got an opportunity to, I mean, if you are even close to 30-30 or 50% of the possession, then ECU has a very good chance to win this ball game. I think ECU is going to win, but that's how you win the ball game against Navy. You control the ball.
Yeah, I mean, we know this is not a very good Navy team, but they can keep it close because of the way they play offense and because of the style and the triple option that they play. There's going to be 3 to 4 possessions a half, I think, for ECU's offense in this game. In my opinion, they're only going to get 3 or 4 possessions a half. And so, being able to sustain those drives, being able to, like you said, capitalize and score touchdowns on those drives is key to me. I think Navy's quarterback has less than 300 yards passing on the season. I think I read a stat on ESPN. He has less than 300 yards passing on the season. We all know they're not putting the ball in the air. It's just not going to happen. So they're going to pound the rock. They're going to pick up some first downs. I mean, that's just what they do. They have perfected the triple option. They're going to be able to pick up first downs. They're going to scare us a little bit. They're going to get close to the end zone. That's going to happen. How do we respond on defense is another thing. I absolutely believe that we should win this game. We will win this game. But it can become a trap game if we don't capitalize touchdowns. If we're scoring field goals instead of touchdowns, that's how this becomes a trap game. Also, I would like for us, because our kicker, I think, was 3 for 3 when it was 30 yards or less. And to me, that's perfect. If it's 30 yards or less, send a field goal kicker out there. Let him kick a field goal. But anything past the 30, I have no confidence. And we should go for that, in my honest opinion. We should have a 4th and 10. We should still go for it, a 435 on their 35-yard line. So anything under 30, okay, I'm cool with, kicking a field goal. Anything in no man's land, I think we should always go for it. So that's just how I feel.
Yeah, I mean, looking at Navy stats, and we're going to talk – we haven't even announced our guest. We have a 2-time guest now coming on the podcast, Pete Medhurst, play-by-play voice of – the midshipman, he's coming on the podcast here in a little bit. But, I mean, this – I hope I'm saying it right. Ty Lavatai, I don't know if I said that right. He's got 273 yards passing.
Yeah.
For the
season.
Their number one receiver has 160 receiving yards.
For the season.
So, Jaquan McMillan, you've got your assignment. And then you've got – you've got your running back it's a fullback, has 510 yards on the season on 133 attempts. So, I mean, I'm not saying that they're not going to put up points, but this offense, and we said it last year, ECU knows how to stop the triple option. Coach Houston has run the triple option.
Right.
Blake Harrell, he's been on teams that ran the triple option and played against teams that
our defense ran the is triple option. Ready.
And last year, I mean, the one play, I think back to this play, the one play that they hit us for a deep, like not a, it wasn't a deep ball, but it was a pass over the middle about 15 yards downfield, and the receiver caught it and we just couldn't catch it. And we lose by, I believe it was 4 points.
Yeah.
And this game, I mean, ECU's much better than they were last year. Defense is much improved, and Navy's offense has taken a step back. So it's gonna be a good game. Tune in CBS Sports Network, I believe it is. But yeah, Artie, Let's see. Anything else on this Memphis game?
No, I mean, I don't, you know, I think we hit on everything we needed to hit on. Neither one of us is shocked that we won this game. We both called ECU to win the Memphis game going into it. We both called that. So
I didn't think we would win it like we did win it, though.
No, I did not think we'd win it like we did win. I thought we win it in regulation. I thought we might win by a field goal or maybe even a touchdown.
Artie, let me ask you this. So Coach Houston talked about it in his press conference today.
Yeah.
Today being Tuesday. He was asked by a friend of the podcast, Steve and I go. The play call with a minute and a half left in regulation, you're on the 1 yard line or whatever it was.
Yeah.
First down. I mean, do you try to find a way to milk some clock there? What is your take on that?
I would have loved to have taken the 29 seconds off and get that under a minute, just me personally. But I mean, it worked out in our favor regardless, but yeah, I would have, anytime I can milk the clock and take some time off. Yeah. I would have done it.
Yeah. I was like, why are we hiking the ball?
That's been the one thing. It didn't make any sense to me. We just didn't have to do it.
That's been the one thing that I've said all year is when we get down in the red zone and it's late in the game and we have a chance to score, take some time off the clock, take some pressure off that defense. Put the pressure on the offense. Last thing I want to say, we called it. I'll say we called it, just like I think everybody else in Pirate Nation called it. When Holden Ahlers is allowed to use his legs,
he's electric. He's dangerous.
He opens up so many opportunities.
I mean,
both passing and rushing for his teammates.
How long have we been saying this though? You have a dual threat quarterback. You have to utilize that. It's like we were trying to protect Holton from being the best possible quarterback that he can be, and that's using your legs and your arm. When he runs and he runs efficient and he's running over linebackers the way he was doing in this game, that opens up so many things in the passing and the run game.
Yeah, well, Artie, let's go ahead and send it over to our interview with, like I said, the Navy play-by-play voice, Pete Medhurst, to talk ECU Navy this weekend. How's that sound?
Let's do it.
Once again on the Boneyard Podcast, we are pleased to be joined this time, his second time on the podcast. He's now a two-time friend of the podcast. Play-by-play voice of the Navy midshipman, Pete Medhurst. Pete, how's it going, man?
Guys, good to be with you. And without question, East Carolina, second only to Brigham Young in terms of media asking me to come on and talk to them. So it's you guys have an unbelievable fan base. And yeah. I mean, as I've told everybody all along, I knew Mike was eventually going to get it going there. Now the ultimate question is, how long is Mike going to be there? He's done a fabulous job. And I imagine that phone's going to be ringing coming up here in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, the rumor mill has already started. I saw something with the Virginia Tech opening up today. Justin Fuente out the door. I saw an article saying, hey, what about Mike Houston? He's a proven winner. Pump the brakes.
Whit Babcock, the AD, by the way, for Virginia Tech, is from Harrisonburg and went to James Madison. So – yeah. I'm sure he's well aware.
Whit Babcock is a name that ECU fans that have been following the program for the last 5-6 years cannot stand to hear. So stay in your lane. But yeah, now we wanted to talk a little bit about Navy football. Navy, I mean, they've had kind of a down year this year. What do you think's kind of led to that?
Well, I mean, injury and inexperience at quarterback. I mean, as you guys know, through the years, we've had some unbelievable guys there who've put up 76, 66 against East Carolina, against decent East Carolina teams, too. So we're just an incredibly young football team at a lot of key spots. And where those youngsters have really excelled and gotten better in some places, you know, keeping Ty healthy at quarterback has been an issue for us this year. We've had a constant shuttle of offensive linemen due to injury. They've actually not played poorly, but the level of play that you have to play at in the American, and with our schedule overall, you know, if you're not perfect, you know, you're going to lose to the teams that, yeah, we're playing. And that's really what has come. What, I mean, we went through that. We had a 7-game stretch after the Notre Dame game where we had the bye week. And we didn't play last week. That's the toughest 7-game stretch we've ever played at the Naval Academy. And we can go back to when Roger Staubach was playing and stuff like that. We've never played a 7-game stretch that tough. And we lost to Cincinnati by a possession. We lost to SMU by a possession. We lost to Houston by a possession. So our record in theory could be a lot different going into this game if we make an extra play or two. But at the same time, because of some of that inexperience and the issues, especially with special teams, those teams were able to make plays that really crippled us in those football games.
Yeah, I mean, when you say that, I'm looking at the scores now. I mean, that's kind of like what ECU's gone through this year, but they've come out with a couple more wins throughout that. I mean, lost to Houston in overtime, lost to UCF by a possession.
South Carolina
on a last-second field goal. I mean, those are three. I mean, this team, the ECU team, I mean, they could very well be 9-1, 8-2 right now. And we're not there, but it sounds like from Navy's point, it's kind of the same thing.
Well, I mean, I think, again, when you know you go back to a lot of football games, and in a one-possession game, you can find a couple of plays either way that sway the game in one team's favor or the other. So, I mean, that's the – you know, part of it, though, is making sure that you start to make those plays consistently. And, you know, it just seems – especially special teams, that's been the big disappointment. You know, ask Sonny Dykes. What was Sonny Dykes doing kicking to Marcus Jones? I mean, are you crazy?
Yeah.
You know, we're in complete control. We are in complete control in Houston. And Marcus Jones' return gets them back in the game, and eventually they go on to win the game. So that, you know, that's where special teams been a real killer for us in the return game. We've given up a couple of big returns on this season that have been momentum-changing plays in a lot of these football games. So if you're not great in all three phases, you can get hurt in one, two, or all three of those phases. And that's what's happened to us at times so far this year. I mean, we go to Notre Dame and it's 17-6 going to the fourth quarter. We're right there. Our defense playing out of its mind, playing a great game. And, you know, we give up a safety, give them a short field. And then all of a sudden you look up and you're down, you know, 27-6. You're like, what happened? Where did it go? So that's what's so disappointing, is knowing you're so close, but at the same time, knowing you've got a lot of improvement to do. And I mean, look, I think one of the differences, look at East Carolina has found a way to make plays this year. That's why they're at 6 wins. And that's why we are where we are. We haven't been able to make some of those plays late in some of these ball games that have led to our record being what it is.
Yeah, you know, Coach Ken, you know, he's on the verge of 2 straight losing seasons now. And I know that Navy has played well, but do you believe that he is on the hot seat after this season? Do you think he's going to have a successful season next year to keep his job, or is he kind of safe?
You know, when you win as much as he has, I think he has earned the right to fulfill the contract and correct what's wrong, because we haven't had many back-to-back losing seasons during the triple option era. So I think you deserve to have a chance to fix it. Last year in college football, I don't hold any team responsible for what their record was. You know, last year, the fact that we played at all was amazing in itself, a great testament to the kids, the programs, and everybody in it, from, you know, school presidents all the way down to the lowest intern, so to speak, on the totem pole. The fact that we played football at all last year was crazy. And the fact that we played so much of it was exceptional, a testament to their dedication. This year, you know, look, I mean, coaches know, and Coach Niumatalolo has talked about this, you know, this is a results-oriented business. You know, we all loved Ruffin McNeil. We hated to see Ruffin McNeil go, but it's a results-oriented business. So my only thing is, if you're going to make a change, make sure that person is better. And when ECU ran roughing out, you know, Scotty Montgomery's a great guy, nice person, but it's results-oriented business. They weren't even close. I mean, they weren't even close to what they were when Ruff was there. So that's why you got to be careful when you make these moves. And when you have a guy that's had some success, you know, you give that guy a chance to fix the problem. And I think Kenny Amatalolo and this staff have earned the right to fix the problem because of all the games they've won. He's the winningest coach in the history of the school. He's got time left on the contract. So, you know, I mean, the only thing that ever sways something like this is in rivalry games. You know, if we lose to Army again, I mean, you know, who knows what, you know, could be on the table. But, you know, I expect us to play a very competitive game with Army and have a chance to win. So I believe he's definitely earned the right to fix the problem. I mean, you win over 100 games as the coach at the Naval Academy. You know, you deserve, at least in my opinion, that chance, because I don't think it's not like we're, you know, this far away. You know, it's like we're really far away from it. So I think another year of experience for Ty at the quarterback, if he can come back and finish these last three games, bodes well for him going into next year as the starter.
And I was just going to ask, how long do you think it takes for Coach Ken to get this team back to a bowl game, back to 6+ wins as a program?
Well, with our youth being what it is, I would think next year we've got a chance to be right back at 6. You know, again, you're this close against really good teams. So we'll see, you know, if we can get over the hump against those teams next year. But I have to believe experience is a great thing to have in your pocket. You know, we've got defenders right now that are freshmen and sophomores playing at a lot of these spots. The quarterbacks, you know, the top two quarterbacks are sophomores. Mm-hmm. So we got a lot of guys, as I keep telling people, we got a lot of FR and SO on the depth chart right now. And sometimes you just got to learn and take your lumps while those guys are learning to play at this level. Because I don't care where you played high school football, I don't care how good it is, when you get to this level and you're playing against teams that prepare for you, plan for every little thing you do to the nth detail, it's a different ball game. And there is a adjustment factor, and some of our guys are finding that out right now.
Now, you talked a little bit earlier about the defense, mm-hmm. and one of the guys that, I mean, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, Diego Figo.
Yep.
I mean, he kind of stands out to me in that middle linebacker position. What can you tell me about him and this Navy defense as they try to stop EC's powerful offense?
Yeah, Figo's a pro. I think he's got a chance to play at the next level. He'll definitely get into somebody's camp. We've had NFL scouts there, and you know, they say he can play at that level. I mean, there are a couple of things that he's going to have to work on, and ultimately will decide whether he sticks or stays in the National Football League because of the way the pro game is changing. I mean, if it was the quintessential, you know, 1980s, 90s, early 2000s, where, you know, people are just running the ball 30, 33 times a game, Figo's in there thumping your running back every play. You know, now your middle linebackers have to be able to cover more, and that will ultimately be the challenge. But let's face it, the American, as a linebacker, you're covering somebody every play in this league because of the way the offenses are. So he's had plenty of experience and has that stuff on tape. Great leader, tremendous kid, plays the game with an incredible motor. And if you're designing a Navy football player, Diego Figo is probably that guy. When you look around our defense, and that's why I said so many young players, Jacob Busick at defensive end, been fantastic for us. Sophomore, local kid from here in Maryland. He's had a couple of sacks over the last couple of ball games for us. He's been sensational. Clay Cromwell and Donald Berniard, our combination at nose guard, have been fantastic. You have a great leader in Jarius Warren, a senior at the other defensive end spot. And in the secondary, where, I mean, look, we've been killed at safety with injuries. Both of our starting safeties at the start of the season, not going to finish the year because of injury. And you look at where, you know, what we're playing there right now, we got a very talented freshman in Rayon Lane, who played in the MIAA up here in Maryland at high school. And he is really showing a lot of terrific traits so far. And I don't suspect he will come out of the lineup over the next 4 years here at the Naval Academy.
Got you. What do you, in your honest opinion, what will it take for Navy to not only compete, but be able to pull off an upset in this game?
I mean, I think we've got to possess the football. We've got to convert on third down. That's, you know, in the games we've won, we've converted on third down. The games we've lost, you know, we haven't converted on third down very much. You know, between the 20s, our offense has been pretty good. Mm-hmm. It's red zone execution, clearly, that has to happen. But if you look at what Mike has done, and this is, you know, it takes time, but look at what he's done in changing the philosophy and the look of that program. They're a physical team. They've got a personality now as a very physical team offensively. I mean, they're running for 173 yards a game. I mean, you don't do that in college football right now if you don't have that real physical mentality. And defensively, I mean, I think Jaquan McMillan could challenge for the defensive player of the year in the American Athletic Conference. I really think he's been that good. I think if somebody voted for him for that award, no one would really, you know, discredit your vote. He's been fantastic so far this year. So the fact that they've become very physical on offense, much more physical on defense than they've ever been, with more playmakers on the defensive side, it's going to be tough for Navy, but we know the formula: ball control, execute in the red zone, and our defense has been fantastic. So if you want to get up there and run the football, our defense will get in the phone booth with you. Mm-hmm. So as we know, you know, Holt Naylor's can go off at any time, and that's I think his play will be what decides this ultimately in this football game coming up on Saturday.
Yeah, so Navy, I mean, it's one of the most storied programs in history, and I mean, there's so much history around the program, so much history around the Naval Academy. What's one thing that ECU fans, there's going to be a lot of them making their way up to Annapolis. What's one thing that they can expect from game day in Annapolis?
Oh, without question, the tailgating is fantastic. The game day pageantry, where all 4,000 midshipmen march into the stadium at 3:00. So they're going to want to be in their seats by 3:00 to see all of that and the pageantry before the national anthem, the flyover and things of that nature. But Navy football Saturdays are terrific up here. It's one, you know, as you all know down there, I mean, you guys have an incredible environment down there. It's one of the best in college football. The tailgating is everything. The people are fantastic. And, you know, it's Annapolis is a great city. I think we're going to get decent weather here. There's going to be a little rain Thursday night into Friday morning, but other than that, it's going to be fine for game day coming up on Saturday. So plenty to do all right there downtown Annapolis within the City Dock area. You don't have to go very far. And, you know, East Carolina always travels well up here. We see a lot of purple and gold in the stands over there in that far right-hand corner all the time. So they've always traveled well. I mean, we've been playing you guys going all the way back to like 2006 before we were both ever, you know, in the American Athletic Conference. So we've played you guys a lot. You guys have always traveled well. And I think, again, the days of us putting 76 and 66 up on East Carolina are long gone, especially while Mike is there with that program right now.
You know, one of the last questions I have for you, what's more important to Navy football? Is it a winning season or is it beating Army?
Both. I mean, we you know, our goals are the same every year. We want to win the American, we want to beat Army, and we want to win the Commander-in-Chief's trophy. Those are our goals. I mean, in 17, we played in the championship game, you know, with Temple. And so we're, you know, that's what we strive for. And, you know, the last season and a half has been certainly disappointing because of the standards that we set for ourselves at the Naval Academy, but we're never going to lower those standards. We're going to continue to try and work to get back to the standard that we've set. I mean, the first 3 years we were in the league, we're competing for the Western Division championship. And that's what we expected when we joined the league. But as we've also seen the teams in the league, Houston's early success, UCF's success, Memphis's success. You know, think about this. Before they got into the American, Memphis was awful. I mean, Memphis was a terrible program. And Justin Fuente, who ironically got fired at Virginia Tech, you know, brought that program out of the ashes. you know, and raise their level of program to where they're one of the top teams in the American. And that's why your win last week over them, 30-29, is so eye-opening to people, not only in the conference, but, you know, what's great about your fan base is two Sundays ago, I'm listening to Barrett Salee and Tom Luganville Sunday morning on Sirius XM College, and a guy calls in and says, hey, watch out for East Carolina. So I know the fan base is excited finally. Ironically, I was listening to one of the postgame shows earlier this year, and after a loss, and it was like a morgue. Everybody's like, oh, we got to fire everybody, and, you know, this quarterback should be playing, and that guy should be playing. It's amazing how quick the tune has changed here. Over the last 2 months. But that's why, as college football fans and people that cover the game, that's what we love about it so much. I mean, your fortunes can change from week to week, year to year. And a program that sets standards, a program, look, let's face it, there were administrative issues a few years ago that hamstrung the East Carolina program. Those issues have been figured out now at the proper level. And the football program, again, has the kind of support. The athletic program has the kind of support it needs administratively, again, to be good. They went out and hired a terrific coach. They made a good commitment there. And they're starting to see the payoff on that now, again, as ECU is going to a bowl game this year.
Now, I'd be remiss if I had you on the podcast again this year and didn't ask. Last year, we talked about NL East baseball. I'm wearing my Braves World Series champions pullover. Last year
my Nats championship ring is downstairs locked up in a case. So, you know,
hey,
I mean, the baseball is a game, and I think everybody immediately wrote Atlanta off when Acuna got hurt. There's no question about that. You have one of the most unbelievable leaders in the game, and Freddie Freeman still in that dugout and in that clubhouse. But the one thing Atlanta did this year is they significantly invested at the trade deadline. Liberty Media said, hey, you know, Alex Anthopoulos, go ahead and get some pieces. I'm sure Alex was like, what? What do you mean?
Financial flexibility, what?
Yes, yes. So those pieces, all of those guys were so instrumental. I mean, who could have seen what Eddie Rosario did the postseason coming? No, but there's no chance anybody could have seen that coming. But what's going to be interesting, you know, going forward is with Stephen Cohen now with the Mets and the money that he will allegedly invest, you know, Philly today, you know, hiring former Nat Howie Kendrick as a special assistant to the general manager. Howie's a terrific baseball mind. He's going to really help that organization. I think we're going to get back to a time where the East is really a beast again, where you have the potential for two or three close to 90 win teams in the division. And I will be very interested to see what kind of spending spree Mr. Cohen goes on with the Mets. And at the same time, think about this. Atlanta was so good without Acuna. You're going to put Ronald back in that lineup, you know, coming up this year. And you know, you would think in theory that's going to make Atlanta better. I'll be interested to see what they do with Freddie in terms of term and total dollars. I think the annual value is not a problem. Question is how long of a commitment do you want to make a guy that's already past 30, but he's your unquestionable face of the franchise and leader inside that clubhouse. You'd be a fool not to try and do everything you could to bring that guy back.
I mean, in my opinion, you're looking at, yeah, Freddie Freeman, he's – he'll be 32 all season, pretty much. I believe he turns 33 in September. I have no problem with giving the man an 8-year deal and signing him until he's 40 to play for the Braves. Because I mean, you think about it, the DH is coming to the NL,
mm-hmm.
and eventually, I mean, you can hand him that position. You can hand him that spot. I mean, he's a guy that likes to play every single day. Maybe he works into some kind of rotation, first base, and DH.
Well, I mean, think about this in the division. Is there a better infield in the National League East than what Atlanta has?
I don't know if there's a better infield in all of baseball right now.
Certainly possible. I mean, if you talk about complete infields, first, second, third, and short, Atlanta's in the discussion. I mean, they are in the discussion with those four guys based on the seasons that they had. I mean, my daughter, huge baseball fan. She's 13. She loves baseball. We talk about it all the time. And, you know, we both kind of – it kind of dawned on us, you know, in the World Series, you know, when they played in the American League Park, Dansby Swanson was hitting ninth. What? Yeah. You know,
yeah.
that tells you everything you need to know about what that lineup was doing in the postseason is the fact that Dansby Swanson's hitting ninth in the American League ballpark. So great for Brian Snitker. You love to see guys who dedicate their life to a organization. I mean, Brian's been in that organization for a long time.
Over four decades.
Right. Those are the kind of guys that if your team can't win, those are the guys you root for. Because he could have gone and worked somewhere else at any point along the way. He might have even been able to be a manager somewhere else along the way. But his dedication to the organization was rewarded with that win. And those are the kind of guys that you're happy for winning in situations like that, because that guy's been a Braves lifer. And, you know, it finally worked out for them as an organization. And more importantly for him, who, let's face it, you know, bullpen issues over the last couple of years. He's been a highly criticized manager. But, hey, every manager is going to be criticized when your bullpen goes out there and blows up in smoke. But, I mean, even that bullpen this year, you know, those guys were phenomenal in the postseason. And, you know, look, to win postseason games now, the game has changed. You know, our starters are not going seven or eight innings. If your starter goes six, you're throwing a party. Right now with the way the game is being played. I don't necessarily know if that's good for the long-term health of the game and the pitcher's arms, to be quite frank. But, you know, you got to play the game the way the game's being played right now. And Brian pulled all the right moves in the postseason and got the W. That's two out of the last three now, won by the National League East, the division of power, baby.
I'm all, as long as the Mets and the Phillies don't win another one, I'm good.
Look, Philly's the team that talked tough when they signed Harper.
Right.
Ownership talked tough. Oh, we're going to spend some money. And then after that, really hasn't spent the whole lot of money. You got to upgrade the bullpen. I mean, come on. I mean, they went and got Ian Kennedy, big deal. But getting the ball to Ian Kennedy, you know, was a crapshoot. And if that lineup is good, that lineup was good enough until Rhys Hoskins got hurt. When he went out, that really, really hurt them. But, you know, if you don't improve the pitching with Philadelphia, it doesn't matter how good that lineup is, because you're going to keep losing games 9-7, 7-5, 10-8, the way they did all year long again this year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I'd love if they went 0-162, but that's just me. Now, Pete, like we said earlier, we're coming to Annapolis. The Boneyard Podcast
will be there. Yep,
is gonna come down and have a good time. What are some places that maybe we should check out? Or we're staying in DC, but we're definitely gonna hang out after the game and try to find a place to get food and drinks.
Well, if you want to go to downtown Annapolis, ample opportunities just in the downtown City Dock area. Mm-hmm. Plenty of opportunity for you. You know, if you're in DC Friday night, places all over the district to get some great food and beverage. So you're not going to be hurting for food coming up this weekend. There's no doubt about that. You could be staying in two better places than DC and being in Annapolis and have a great time. Coming up this weekend. I mean, the thing, you, in fact, anything, you'll have too many choices, quite frankly. So take advantage of it. It's a great city. And, you know, we're thrilled that you and the rest of the ECU fan base are all coming up as well. They've always been, like I said, a great engaged fan base. And these games have been very entertaining through the course of the years, and wouldn't expect anything less coming up on Saturday.
All right. Well, Artie, you got any other questions?
That's all I had.
All right. Well, Pete, thank you again for joining us on the Boneyard Podcast. It's becoming a yearly thing. I don't know if Navy's. I think they're out of the rotation next year.
Who knows what the rotation is going to look like?
All right. That's another question. Real quick. With conference realignment, this is a question I really want to ask you. Navy's been in the West, right? With conference realignment, do you think that they stay West, or do you think that they'll eventually come to the East?
It's a great question. I think based on the number of teams, the divisional format has to come back so the schedule lines up the right way. I think ultimately there are so many teams from Texas now in the league still, even with Houston departing. Getting to Texas is incredibly important for us because, you know, we have anywhere from 20 to 30 kids from Texas on our roster every year. So getting to Texas is important. I don't know if it's a deal breaker by any stretch of the imagination, but you're usually going to be in the rotation against somebody from Texas now going forward. So if to balance it out, if we've got to stay in the East, we'll take that. I'm sure, we won't fight it. Because there's going to be ample opportunity to get kids to Texas during the course of their career so their families can see them play in person.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's all I got. Artie, anything else pop in your mind? All right. Well, Pete, thank you again for joining us on the Boneyard podcast. Two-time guest, friend of the podcast. We always enjoy talking to you.
Absolutely.
You got it, guys. Appreciate you having me.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good one.
You too, man. See you.
Once again, that was our interview with Pete Medhurst, the play-by-play voice of the Navy midshipman. Artie, always a pleasure to have him on the podcast.
Absolutely.
So let's we got some Twitter questions, Artie. Let's get into that. Let's see here. I'm pulling them up. And we'll go to the first question from our friend Brandon. Brandon Avery, friend of the podcast. Hey,
friend of the podcast.
With our defense playing so well and the defensive coordinator nominated for awards, do you see any teams trying to poach him for a head coaching job soon? Not right now. I think he might get an opportunity to be a defensive coordinator somewhere else.
Right.
Take a step up. You got to remember, this is his first coaching gig, D1. So, at least at the coordinator position, I'd have to go back and look, but this is his first gig D1. I don't think he's going to be a D1 head football coach. I don't think he's going to leave ECU to go be an FCS head coach. Maybe a school like Virginia Tech calls and says, "Hey, we want to offer you our defensive coordinator position." Then maybe he thinks about it and he might take it. But if he stays, maybe he parlays that into a better position. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I definitely don't think he's going to be getting any head coaching offers, at least not offers that he wants. As far as D coordinator, I kind of see where you're going. But I think in his honest opinion, and I don't know him personally, and I don't want to speak for him, but I think he's got more to prove at East Carolina. I don't think he would just leave after this season. He's proven a lot, but as far as being a, top-notch D coordinator the way he wants to be, I don't know if he's gotten there yet, and I know he still wants to get there. He wants to get this defense to an elite level nationally, so not just in the American Conference. So I think he's still got unfinished business at East Carolina. I don't see him getting poached away. Not right now. Maybe in the future, but not right now.
All right. Next question, John Smith. We keep saying we're going to have him on the podcast. John, we're going to get you on. He says, seems basic, but who do you want to see in a bowl game? For me, it's UNC, Virginia Tech, or NC sucks.
None of those.
You don't want to see any of them?
No, I want Coastal and the Myrtle Beach Bowl.
You want Coastal and the Myrtle Beach Bowl?
I want Coastal and the Myrtle Beach
Bowl. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you got half the stadium in that little powder blue that they got, another half in purple.
I think it's teal.
In Myrtle Beach, teal, whatever it is.
It's not powder blue. Jeez, powder blue is basically what Carolina wears. Those
I don't pay attention to these schools.
Artie, I'm going to take out Virginia Tech. I don't know the rest of their schedule, but I don't know if they're going to make a bowl game. They're still 5-5, as is UNC. But I think UNC's got Wofford this weekend. They're going to get to six wins. I think NC State's going to be in a more prestigious bowl than we are, unfortunately. Yeah,
State's not playing us.
So I think out of the three you listed, give me UNC. I think that's a fun game, and I love seeing those fans and baby blue cry. So yeah, give me UNC.
What bowl game? If we play UNC, what bowl game?
Ooh, is it still the Belk Bowl in Charlotte?
Yeah, I think so. It might have changed to something else, but I think it's the Belk Bowl
or the Armed Forces Bowl up in Annapolis.
Does the American play an ACC opponent in a bowl game?
Yeah, the Fenway Bowl.
Hmm.
Okay. I saw a couple places mentioning us there playing Louisville.
You wouldn't have two Southern teams in a Fenway Bowl though.
I mean, ECU Louisville.
But I mean, I'd love to play Louisville. But like I said, I want to go to a warm weather bowl. To be honest with you, I'd love going to the Boca Raton Bowl or the Myrtle Beach Bowl. That's really where I want to be.
Or he's going to find himself at the Hawaii Bowl.
That's where I want to be. So,
all right, moving along. Knowledgeable.com, kknowledgeable.com. Shout out to y'all. Do you think we need to outscore Navy or outplay them on defense this weekend? I think we need to outscore them to win.
Yes. I absolutely think we need to outscore it. Neither team is going to have a bunch of possessions in this game. So
I think, generally speaking, that's how you win football game. I'm kidding. I think you got to outscore them. And then, lastly, Petey, our boy Petey, he says, with Cincy coming to town next week, ECU may have a chance to make the conference championship if they beat Cincy and Cincy loses this week to SMU. Would you rather Cincy be undefeated when they come to Dowdy or have a shot to beat them to get into the American Athletic Conference Championship?
Jared, when I saw this question earlier, I saw it about 4 hours ago. And I was like, damn, I don't know.
That's a tough question.
And I'm still trying to figure out, like, an undefeated Cincinnati and if we beat an undefeated top three Cincinnati, what that does to our program, like – oh, but then again, the chance to go to the American Athletic Conference. You win the American.
Retribution against Houston.
You win the American, you go into a New Year's Six Bowl. So it's like, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I lean in the direction of I don't know. But at this point.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
At this point, I would love, no matter what, I want to see us get to 8 wins. I want us to beat Navy. I want us to beat Cincinnati. But do I want to beat Cincinnati when they're top 3 in the country? Or do I want to beat Cincinnati when they're number 9? That's the question. Both are top 10 wins. Both are wins where you storm the field. Both are.
Yeah, but top 3 is like we just ruin your playoff berth. We ruin that for you.
And they're traitors because they're leaving the American. They're leaving the Power 6 to go to the Power 5, whatever. I don't think the Big 12 is that much better.
Oklahoma.
get to that in a minute. All right. Artie, I'm going to go ahead and say it. We're going to have plenty of opportunities to play for conference championships over the next
couple. Yes.
Give me Cincinnati, number 3 in the country after Oregon loses this weekend. And give me Cincinnati, number 3. Their playoff hopes are hanging in the balance. ECU comes in and beats the ever-living shit out of Cincinnati.
I'm just going to say this. Coming into this season, I didn't think we had a chance.
No shot.
To play for an American Conference Championship. Just the fact that we have a chance to play for a conference championship, that's enough for me. As far as this season, this year, that's enough for me. Just knowing that we have a chance to go. I think I agree with you. Give me a top 3 Cincinnati in Dowdy-Ficklin Stadium. I know it's Black Friday. The kids are going to be gone. So we really have to depend on the Pirate faithful and the alumni showing up to this game, because it's probably not going to be a lot of students at this game. I could be wrong, but probably not. But give me that, man, because that atmosphere, if it's right and if it's rocking and Dowdy, whoo!
All right, Artie, let's move on to Walk the Plank. Do you have one?
I don't. No, I'm fresh out this week.
All right. I got one.
Go ahead.
An old pal, Lincoln Riley.
Yeah, I heard about this.
Lincoln Riley was he was upset after losing to Baylor. Oklahoma lost to Baylor this past weekend. He was upset that Baylor's head coach decided to go for the field goal. I believe they were already up like 10 points, 30 seconds left. They kicked a field goal. The reason they kicked a field goal was because point differential in the Big 12 is a tiebreaker to get into the Big 12 championship. He was mad. He said it was basically classless and goes against the sportsmanship code. Lincoln, stop crying. Your team's not that great. They shouldn't be in the top 10. I've been saying it all year long.
We all said we're going to get caught.
And you got caught. Next, this is a ricochet shot at Baylor. I said it time and time again. Your top 15 team. Don't storm the field.
Stop storming the field.
Jeez.
Like, you're literally a top 15 team in the country. What the hell are you storming the field for? You have a great football team.
You beat a team that was six spots ahead of you.
Stop storming that. The field.
Stop storming the field.
I agree on that. Don't do that.
Especially after you lost to TCU and then talk shit about them storming the field the week before.
Don't do that.
All right, Artie. Let's get into some of these betting lines and wrap this thing up. First on the docket, Michigan State goes into Columbus, Ohio, playing Ohio State. The over-under is 67. Ohio State's a 19-point favorite. Do the Buckeyes, do they slip up this weekend?
I'm going to be honest with you, Jared. Fuck both these teams. I hope it ends in a tie. I don't care.
I hope they both lose.
I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care who wins this game.
I'm gonna take Michigan State against the spread. I don't think they win outright, but give me Michigan State plus 19. I'm also going to take the under in this game, over under 67.
I will say this. If Michigan has any chance of getting to the playoff, they need Ohio State to beat Michigan State, and then they need to beat Ohio State. So I guess I need Ohio State to win this game.
All right. Next, number 3, Oregon on the road at number 24, Utah, 7-3 Utah. Utah's a 3-point favorite over the number 3 team in the country. I think Utah wins outright. I think they might win by two touchdowns.
Yeah, just like Oklahoma, I think Oregon is going to get caught again. I think Utah is a pretty decent squad. And I think Oregon, like they've always been, they have a lot of talent. They have a lot of speed. They don't have a lot of size. They don't have a lot of, you know, get up and girth to them. So, yeah, I think Utah wins this game. I think Oregon gets knocked out in the playoff.
All righty. And then next. Wake at Clemson.
I didn't know that was this weekend.
This is an interesting game. Clemson is a 4-point favorite over the number 12 team in the country.
Wow.
7-3 Clemson over 9-1 Wake Forest. I think Wake goes into Death Valley, plays a good game, and then comes back home to Winston-Salem with an L.
I like the way you did that. Yeah, I agree. I think Clemson is still too good for a team like Wake Forest. I think they're going to flex their muscles. They're going to, you know, they're having a down year, but they're still good enough to beat Wake Forest. So I got Clemson.
All righty. And then a game that all Pirate fans will be keeping an eye on this weekend. It is SMU at Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be an interesting game. We talked about it a little bit earlier. Cincinnati's an 11.5-point favorite, and the over-under is 65. Give me Cincinnati. Cincinnati covers the spread. They win by two touchdowns and take the over. Tanner Mordecai's the real deal.
I think this is the week that Cincinnati flexes their muscles a little bit as well because they've been playing all these close games and all these bad teams. I think they've probably had an excellent week of practice. They know they've got a pretty good SMU team, and I think they want to put the nation on notice with a chance to creep into the top 3. I think they want to put the nation on notice And I think they beat SMU probably by 10 points, maybe even more.
All righty. And then lastly, the game of the week, Artie. East Carolina University, the Pirates, the bowl-eligible Pirates. Get your bowling shoes on, people. Head up to Sink Navy in Annapolis, Maryland. Artie, -4 for ECU, so they're a four-point favorite. 46.5 is the over-under. That's a tough over-under. I'm going to I'll say that ECU wins. And I think they flex their muscles a little bit this weekend too. I think that this is going to be a 24-10 football game. Win by two touchdowns against a team that, I mean, it's hard to really keep any momentum going on offense. Just because of how much they hold the ball. I think ECU flexes their muscles and wins by two touchdowns.
Yeah, I think we're playing with house money now. And I think this is about stacking wins. I think this is about putting ourselves in a better position. I think it's about putting a little bit of fear in the heart of Cincinnati, who's going to have to come to us in 2 weeks. I think we're all thinking about that. I think ECU goes to Annapolis, Maryland, with a goal and a mission and a purpose to win this game pretty handedly, to put themselves in an excellent position. I agree with you. I got this game. I think it's going to be 20-9. You know, I see our defense really holding that triple option. Like I said, I think it's going to be bend, don't break. I think they get close, but they don't get into the end zone. They get field goals. I think ECU is going to score enough to win this game. Give me 20-9 East Carolina going into Cincinnati, 7-4.
All righty. Well, Artie, that's all I got. I'm looking for a big ECU dub. Artie and I,
we gonna be there, baby.
The premier podcast, who have, I mean, been well represented.
Yes, at
every game outside of the Charleston Southern game, because people decide to schedule weddings, you know, during football season for whatever reason. Artie and I are there. We're in there.
We're in there, baby.
The premier podcast. You would think to be official, you got to be in the press box, right, Artie?
Right.
And guess what? That's where we're at. We're up. We're going to be rubbing elbows. Probably see our boy Igo up there.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully they have some good food.
Hopefully.
Maybe some crab legs.
It is a Naval Academy.
So, yeah, your boys.
Cannot wait, though, man. And it's a historic place. It's Annapolis, Maryland. It's going to be a good time. It's going to be cold, so I am happy we're going to be in the press box. It's gonna be about 48 degrees.
That was the real reason I put in for press passes.
It's gonna be cold in Maryland. So.
But Artie, I will say if y'all are there, we're gonna try to roll into town probably about 12 o'clock, 12:30. If you're there, if you're tailgating, hit us up on Twitter,
mm-hmm.
hit us up on Instagram, hit us up on Facebook, hit me up on LinkedIn. I don't care. Let us know where you are.
Let's meet up, baby,
and we'll come meet you.
Beers and crab cakes.
All right. Let's do it. I mean, I'll as long as you get some Old Bay, I'm good. All right, Artie. Any final thoughts?
That's all I got, man. Cannot wait for this weekend. Excited for it. Let's get another Pirate victory. Wash your hands. Wash your butt. We out.
Go 1-0 this week. Sink Navy.
Yes, sir. Deuce.
Peace.